Hey, we're glad you're here this morning. How is everybody? How's all of our kids this morning? Let me hear you. You're out there? Oh, come on. You got to be louder than that. This is a kids service. We invited you to come hang out and hear this morning, so we want to hear you. How are you this morning? Let me hear you. Woohoo! Did you have fun at kids clubs this week? I'm not going to say it real loud because I'll be the only one. Ah! Yeah. Well, we're glad you're in here this morning, and we want to welcome you to our service today. We're glad our kids are in here hanging out with us today. This has been a fun week. They talked about water. I mentioned that on the video, and we're going to be dealing with one of the great stories from the Bible about Jesus and one of his miracles and how he did something that was incredible. And we want to focus on his follower, his disciple Peter, and the relationship that they had there. It's such an important story because really to understand any story of Jesus, we really need to go back to the beginning and understand all of creation and what God is up to, and understand that God created everything that is, and he created the first two people, and he created them to know him, to love him, to live an incredible adventure with him in a dynamic, vibrant, passionate relationship with their creator. But Adam and Eve made a decision, and you and I have made the same decision, that we kind of like being our own God and calling our own shots and doing our own thing. And they rebelled against God, and they sinned, and we do the same thing. And because of that, we end up in a life that is fallen, that is full of struggles, ends up being disconnected from God and separated from God. And we kind of live in a life that is just kind of pulled and tossed and thrown around by the waves of circumstances and the waves of our struggles and the waves of our own choices and our own sin. And so God, understanding that, sent his only son, Jesus. God became a man and lived for about 33 years on this earth. And he did a lot of things. He taught, he shared love with people. He cared for people. And he did a lot of miracles. He healed people. He had miracles where he actually would feed people, thousands and thousands of people, with just a few items of food, a few fish, and a few loaves of bread. But some of the really amazing miracles are the miracles where Jesus did things that overcame or showed his power over nature. And a lot of those things happened on a lake called the Sea of Galilee, where they were out, just this group of guys who had a lot of fishermen with them, out just experiencing what it was like to be on the lake, and all of a sudden things would happen, and Jesus would interact with the elements and prove to them that he was more than just some ordinary guy on this planet, that he was really the God who created these things and who governed all of creation. And this story is one of those stories. Sometimes people say, well, I just can't believe miracles. I can't believe those stories in the Bible because they're unreal. Yeah, that's the point. The point is that something from outside of this creation came into this creation to prove he was over this creation. And this is one of those stories. But the amazing thing about this story is that in the midst of Jesus doing something that is unreal, he invited somebody else to join him. And that person was left with a struggle, a decision. Will I trust what Jesus has said to me and join him in a crazy adventure, or will I stay where it's comfortable and do what's natural for me and just stay here? And that's what we want to deal with and struggle with this morning. A few years ago, I did something that was probably the craziest thing I've ever done. Now, other people, like Tyler, always makes fun of me. He's heard this story before, and Tyler makes fun of me because he thinks Hidden Valley is like for, you know, wimps, because it's not very big. But for me, I'd never been snow skiing before. And when my son was in sixth grade, his class decided they were going on a snow skiing trip to Hidden Valley, and I signed up to go. And I wasn't sure if that meant that I was supposed to stay like in the restaurant and the kind of the lodge just waiting on the kids, or if I was actually supposed to ski. And so I just kind of showed up. They told me that I could ski if I wanted to. Now I looked around, and most of the parents chose the route of staying inside the lodge, drinking, you know, hot cocoa and coffee and just kind of being where it was safe. But that's never been my way of doing things, and I thought, I'm going to go out there and give this a try. And one of the things with skiing, I just got to tell you right up front, is that skiing really needs a good center of gravity and good balance. And there are parts of me that if I get going forward, there's no way to stop them. And so this whole thing was kind of weird. I put on skis, and the first thing I did is I stood up and I just started sliding downhill, and I couldn't stop. Nobody taught me how to stop yet. I just put these skis on, and all of a sudden I'm going down this little hill, and I fell over and then knocked over like three little kids, and I didn't know what to do at that point in time because they're just looking at me like this big man is crushing me. But anyway, so then I got up. Well, they had this little class And they kind of showed you how to ski and what you were supposed to do and how to be on the edge of your skis and how to turn them in if you want to stop and turn them out if you want to go and all this kind of stuff. And so then they took you up this little bitty hill. And like they had this rope and you just grabbed the rope and it just took you. And the first like three times I grabbed it, my skis went and I was just sitting there holding the rope. And I wasn't really figuring that out, but I finally figured out how to grab the rope and just keep myself moving. And it took me up this hill. And they kind of showed me this is what you're supposed to do. And they said, I have to go down the hill once and then a second time to prove to them that I can handle the hill. So I went down. And the hill's, you know, like from me to you sloped. I mean, there's nothing to it. So I'm like, you know, and I'd seen all these alpine skiers. You know, you watch the Olympics on TV, these guys, you know, to get down a position there, you know, and doing all this stuff. And so I decide I'm going to do it. And I go down this hill. And it wasn't too hard. I didn't do too bad. And then they said, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to go over to what they called the bunny hill, which is, for a guy, is a little uncomfortable. I mean, how could a dude be skiing down the bunny hill? I come up with something else. But I went over to the bunny hill, and it had a few little moguls, a few little more challenging than the first hill. But it was still not a huge hill. It still wasn't something. And Andy and I went over there, and we started skiing. A couple of his friends were with us. We started skiing down this hill, and it was kind of fun, and we kind of got the hang of it, and we started feeling proud. And we've, you know, after going down about three or four times, I was like, I've got this one mastered. I am king of the bunny hill. I feel good about myself. And so we decided that we were going to hop on the thing because we thought if we've got this one mastered, the next one shouldn't be too terribly hard. And so we hopped on the ski lift, and it took us up to the top of the mountain. We're thinking, okay, there's going to be an intermediate hill that's like between here and like, for me, crazy. We got to the top of the mountain, and it said if you want to go down the intermediate hill, you go this way. And if you want to go down the challenging hills, you go this way. And the really challenging ones are kind of back this way. And so I said, all right, Andy, we need to go down these hills. There's like one that goes this way and one that goes this way when you got off the slope or off the ski lift. And so we came off the ski lift, kind of came to the edge, and I had a moment of unbelievable terror as I realized the intermediate hill isn't intermediate for me. It was straight downhill from my vantage point. I'm kind of freaking out, and I tried it once, and I took off and I fell down. I was like, oh, this is nerve-wracking. And I began to stand there kind of being afraid. But then I realized these little girls were going right past me. And that was not good either because I'm a man. And men do things like this. They overcome their fears. And I figured at that point, I would rather die than stand on top of that hill. Well, my son had the same idea. And you know, they taught you, you don't ever just stick your skis straight. You kind of got to go down sideways and get used to the hill. He missed that part of the class because he just aimed his skis in one direction and took off down one of the harder hills. He meant to go that way. He just didn't go that way. His skis, and all of a sudden I look up and my son is going 137 miles an hour straight down this hill. And I'm going, Andy, where are you going? And he just kind of waved and just took off. I'm like, my son is doing it. I am so proud. And just about that time, I look up, and all I see is his body go, foo, 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 foo. He rolled about six times down this mountain, and I'm thinking, oh, now not only do I look like a goof because these girls are laughing at me, but now my son is dead, and I don't know how to get to him. So I decided, I've got to get to my son. I've got to overcome this. I took a big, deep breath, and as best as I could, I started trying to listen to what the ski instructors had told me. I kind of angled my skis this way, and then I angled them back this way, and then I fell down. And then getting up on the first part of the slope there was like impossible. I was like, I don't know what to do. I couldn't stand up because every time I'd stand up, my whole feet would just slide up from underneath me. But I finally kind of got that together, and I said, I've got to get to Andy. He's down there. He's probably deeply in pain and needs his dad. And so I got my skis kind of going. I got up about fourth time. I finally got up. I kind of got the groove and I started going. But my problem was I had no ability to steer. And he was down that hill. I couldn't keep myself from going that way. And so I just went by this tree line that my son was on the other side. And I waved. I was like, I hope he's okay. But as I was going down the hill, I, you know, all of a sudden it became incredibly exhilarating. as I kind of figured out what was going on, and I took this leap of faith for me of using the skis and going down the hill, and I kind of figured out how to go from side to side and how to stop and all that kind of stuff. And I made it. Once I got on the skis, I made it to the bottom of the hill without crashing and dying. But then I got to the bottom of the hill thinking I would see that somebody would have helped him up, and I would see him, and he would be down there, and Andy wasn't there, and I'm like freaking out. And so I was down there for like minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, figuring either an ambulance or a big St. Bernard or something would come dragging him here in a minute, you know. About 5 minutes later, here comes Andy down the slope. He's got the thing going. He's going from side to side. He skis right past me. It's like, hey, Andy. He's like, I can't stop. Just wait a minute. Anyway, you know, and he was okay. And we ended up spending the rest of the day skiing, and we went up on those big slopes a couple more times and had a great day. But boy, I want to tell you, that first time when I stood, it felt like this kind of drop-off to me. The idea of putting my skis over the edge there was unbelievably terrifying. And I knew I was left with the decision of whether to stay where I was at or whether to take a leap for me of faith at that time and join an adventure that ended up being something that was a lot of fun. Well, then I come back, and like I said, Tyler made fun of me and said, oh, if you really want to experience, you know, mountains and stuff, go to Colorado. Thank you, but for me that day, I had self-esteem, okay? I felt good about myself because I had gone down the mountain that was ahead of me. Well, imagine for Peter on this day, when he saw Jesus walking on the water, and he asked this question, can I join you? When Jesus said yes, Peter probably had that same kind of experience. And this is what I hope to kind of come across and get to you this morning. I think that when we interact with God, basically every time that God speaks into our lives, whether it's to trust him initially, whether it's in the process of just following him on a daily basis, or whether it's some of the big, huge times in life where God calls us to do something that's radically different, there is always this voice that is calling us to live a life that is different and is an adventure, but it is always a leap of faith into something that I can't do myself. The gospel is all about me living an adventure where I take a leap of faith into something that I can't accomplish. And I have to depend solely and completely on Jesus. And this is what happened with the life of Peter this day. If you have your Bibles, turn over to Matthew chapter 14. If you don't have a Bible, on the end of your row, we have Bibles for you. We'd love for you to pass those down, make sure everybody has a Bible. If you don't have a Bible at home that's your own, we'd love for you to take those Bibles home with you and keep them. Give them away to your friends or to your neighbors. That's what they're there for. We can always buy more. We'd love to give these Bibles away to you or anybody else. So, but grab one of those Bibles, and I forgot to write down a page number. Somebody gets a page number. Page 698 in that Bible. We'll be reading out of the book of Matthew chapter 14, and we'll be reading from verse 22 and reading the story of Jesus walking on the water and this encounter he had with one of his followers named Peter and what happened in that day. Chapter 14, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. One of the things that's amazing about this story is the fact that here is Jesus. Jesus is God who was in the flesh. He was a man, but he was also fully God. But he went and got alone by himself to pray. If you ever want to do an incredible study, if you want to, and you're reading through the Gospels, the first four books of the New Testament, the stories of Jesus' life, one of the amazing things to start as you're reading, mark and note the times that Jesus gets alone to pray. The times where Jesus says, listen, I need to have connection and closeness to my God, my Father. I need to be intimate with him. I need to dialogue. I need to have communication with him. Because every time Jesus gets alone to pray, something incredible happens. Every time Jesus gets alone to pray, he either is calling people out for an unbelievable adventure, or there are miracles. Most of the times when Jesus gets alone to pray, unbelievable miracles like this one takes place, like feeding 5,000 people with a few loaves and a few pieces of bread. And then at the end of the Gospels, the end of the life of Jesus, Jesus once again gets alone to pray as he faces the cross. And he goes to the place where he would pay the penalty for your sins and for mine. And here is Jesus getting alone to pray. This is what I can learn from that. That's a good thing. It's a good thing sometimes for us to realize that if we are going to have the power of God in our lives, we need to get alone with God. That's what Jesus did. Jesus got alone to pray. And as he got alone to pray, he had sent his disciples onto the other side. Verse 24, by this time, the boat was a long way away from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. Now, you need to understand, Matthew's writing this. Matthew is one of Jesus' followers. He had been with these guys a lot, and when it says that the wind was against them, it was fighting them, that's a big deal because these guys were fishermen. They knew what it was like to be on the lake. They knew what it was like to be out there. If it was so strong, the wind was so tough, and the wind was so intense that it was something that they took note of, it had to be pretty incredible. The wind and the waves are beating against the boat. It says, in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. This is about 3 to 6 a.m., 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning. Jesus all of a sudden is walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, and they said, "It is a ghost," and they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." One of the other stories, and by the way, this is one of the stories that's contained in all the Gospels, and one of the other accounts of this story says that Jesus was going to walk right past them. It wasn't until they called out to him that he replied. But he replied to them, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered, said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come with you on the water." Can you imagine this scenario? Here's Jesus walking across this water. They are totally freaked out. They are totally terrified, thinking they're seeing a ghost, feeling like they're in some kind of Spielberg or, crazy movie. And all of a sudden, Jesus turns and says, "It's me." And Peter said, "Hey, if it's you, let me join you." I imagine for the other 11 guys in the boat, they listen to what Peter said. They're like, "Oh, dude, don't do it again." I mean, Peter's reputation, I picture Peter as a big, burly guy, who's kind of tough. He's a fisherman. He works with his hands. He's always got this fish aroma, about him. He doesn't wear good deodorant, but he's a man's dude's guy. But he has this real problem of putting his foot in his mouth all the time, saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. He's the one who's always speaking up. Mouth is functioning before brain is engaged kind of guy, which I resonate with because that's the story of my life. But anyway, he says, "If it's you, I want to join you." And I can imagine the other 11 guys going, "Oh, Peter, not again." But here's the thing. As we even think, man, that's a crazy request, I want you to understand that this is a good thing. Peter looks at Jesus and says, "Listen, I don't understand this. I don't think it's possible, but I do know this. Jesus, if that's where you are, I want to be there too." That is a great wish. It is a great wish for we as fallen, frail, helpless people to look to Jesus and say, "You are the Creator, God who came in flesh, and whatever you're doing, I want to join you." Our prayers so often are like this: "God, this is what I'm doing, please join me. God, this is what I want, do it for me. God, this is what I hope for, do it for me." And instead, maybe we ought to be looking to Jesus saying, "Where are you? What are you doing? What are you about? Whatever that is, I want to join you." And that's what Peter does. Peter says, "Jesus, if it's you, bid me come. Ask me to come. Tell me to join you. I'll do it." That's really a good thing. It's a crazy thing, but it's a good thing. And in verse 29, Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Listen, what a great thing. He gets on the water and he begins to walk. And the Bible doesn't really tell us how far he walked, but Peter is focused on Jesus and trusting Jesus. He gets out of the boat, and can you imagine that scenario? As these guys are looking at him, Peter grabs the edge of the boat, flips his legs over the side, and drops down on the water. And these guys are out thinking, man, he's going down, he's going to drown. Peter begins to walk, and this isn't like, I'm on top of this smooth surface. This is I'm chomping over waves, getting to Jesus as I'm looking to him. But at some point in time, Peter, who is walking, who is stepping over the waves, loses his focus on Jesus and begins to see the elements around him. Now think about this. What did the elements have to do with him walking on the water? Nothing. But then there's this moment where all of a sudden Peter loses his focus and begins to step up, feel that the waves hit him in the leg, feel the wind hitting him in the face, and he begins to realize, hey, I can't do this, which is exactly right. One of the things I want you to understand very clearly is that the gospel, the good news of Jesus, always calls us to things we can't do on our own and to live in ways we can't be on our own. It always calls us to the place where if God doesn't come through, I'm gonna sink. That's the gospel. The gospel absolutely removes all pride and leaves us in a place of humility of saying, God, I can't do this on my own. And when, if you're here today and you've never trusted Jesus, I want you to understand, you cannot save yourself. You cannot come to a place where you can be good enough or strong enough or do anything on your own. It is only Jesus calling us and changing us and keeping us on top of the water. And Peter sees the waves hitting him in the legs and he feels the wind, and all of a sudden he focuses on that. Next thing you know, he doubts, he sinks. And the Bible tells us here, as we go on the story, verse 30, when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried out, Lord, save me. And I love this. Jesus didn't look at him and go, no, you swim yourself, turkey. I thought you were supposed to trust me. You hang in there. I can't believe you failed. You're on your own now. No, Jesus does what he does with all of us. This is the beauty of the story and the beauty of the gospel. But when he saw, verse 31, Jesus immediately reached out his hand, took hold of him, saying to him, oh, you little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. Jesus reaches out and grabs him and lifts him up and puts him back on the water. I want you to notice that he begins to have a conversation, holding his hand or holding onto his neck or whatever he grabbed, pulls him back on top of the water and says, why did you doubt me? And then he puts him back in the boat. This is a cool thing about trusting Christ, about knowing Jesus, about knowing God. We fail, but he picks us up. And he picks Peter up and puts him back in the boat, and then it says that they worshiped him. I love this story. I love what took place. I wish I could go to that setting. If there were, you know, there's a few places where if somebody said, if you go to any story in the Bible, there's a few things I would like to go to, and this is one of them. I would have loved to have seen what happened on that day. I would have loved to have seen the reaction of the other 11 guys in the boat. I would have loved to have seen Peter, and I would love to be the type of guy who makes the same kind of decisions to trust Jesus, to put my life in his hands, even when I know it's not possible and I can't do what he's asking me to do, that I will follow him. I hope that that is the type of faith I have. And I want to challenge you that Christ is calling you to trust him with your life and with things in your life and with adventures in your life that maybe you don't feel like you can pull off, and that's a good thing because he will. And I just want to tell you that we need to have a faith like this. And so that's kind of the challenge this morning. There's some things that have to happen, some steps we need to take if we're going to live that adventure. If we're going to end up taking steps of faith, whether it's trusting Jesus for the first time or trusting Jesus tomorrow with something he's calling you to do, we're going to have to take some steps of faith. And the first one is that you're going to have to lose your fears. These guys saw Jesus walking across the water, and they were terrified. And Jesus said, listen, take courage. Do not be afraid. It's me. And there are times in my life where I have the wind and the waves and the struggles of life. I am terrified. I'm hopeless. I'm depressed. I just want to go crawl up on the couch, watch TV, sleep, and do nothing, because that's the easiest way to deal with life. But God is calling me to an adventure. He's calling me to put skis on and take the leap. He's calling me to get out of the boat and be with him on the water and do something that only he can do, to live a life only he can cause me to live. And when he calls me to do that, I'm going to have to get over my fears. Peter had to get over his fears. He had to get over his fear of past experiences. See, I can imagine as he's standing there on the edge of the boat, and I love kind of this here this morning, because I kind of feel like, you know, here's the front end of a boat, you know. I just hope I don't fall off, because I don't think I'm going to bounce up here. I will hit the ground and hurt myself. But anyway, Peter had to for a moment flash back in life as he was kind of thinking, am I going to get out of this thing or not? He probably went back to when he was like maybe 5 years old, being around the house of a fisherman. He probably remembers being like on a boat dock with his family one day, and he was standing there and somebody was, you know, grabbing a net and bumped him, and all of a sudden he went rolling off the boat dock and he did not bounce. He did not, you know, go rolling on the top of the water. No, he hit the water and he probably went under. And probably when he went under, he probably was kind of fighting to find his way. His past experience said, when I hit water, I go down. He probably remembers a time or two when he was out on a lake like this, and they'd thrown the nets out. And as they were trying to pull the nets in with fish, he lost his balance and went over. And when he went over, he didn't go skidding across the top. He went under. He's probably, as a fisherman, had a few times where either he had to be saved or somebody had to reach down and save him from even drowning. His past experience said, when I fall on the water, when I step on the water, I don't go across the top, I go under. And he had to get over his fear of past experiences. We have to do the same thing. I deal with the fact that I fail all the time. And sometimes the loudest voice in my head, which to me seems to be the voice of reason, is a voice that says, you can't do this. You've failed so many times. And Peter had to get over his fear of past experience. He also had to get over his fear of personal error. Because in his head, there had to be a moment where he said, I cannot walk on water. I cannot overcome this. And even in a life that is a call from Jesus to an adventure of faith, his fear of his own personal error, of being the one who makes a goober of himself, of being the one who makes a dweeb of himself, of being the one who takes this goofy step and knows in his head, when I step down, I'm going through. I mean, I could just imagine as he is trying to put his foot down what had to be going through this guy's head. And his fear of personal error. And there may be some of you here who have never given your life to Christ to begin with. You've never trusted Jesus with your life. You've been religious. You've been involved in church. You've been involved in all kinds of other situations. And you know that Jesus is calling you to trust him, to give him your life. And as you're kind of dealing with what that means, you're looking at yourself saying, but I will fail at this. And the answer is, yes, you will. That's why it's the good news of Jesus, and it's about him. Trust him. And Peter had to get over his fear of failure and being a personal error that I cannot do this. Sometimes it's a really good place to be, to come to the end of myself. But when I come to the end of myself, I have to decide, does that mean I go run and hide, or do I trust Jesus? Third thing, Peter had to overcome the fear of people's expectations. I imagine if Peter would have gotten on the edge and was holding on, he turned around and said, hey guys, what do you think? If they'd have held a vote, it'd have been an 11-0 vote. Dude, you were going to sink like a rock to the bottom. We're going to find your body on shore 3 weeks from now, all right? Do you see the waves? Do you see the dude, this is not, I get the Jesus thing, okay? We've been with him before when he did ridiculous stuff like this, and we didn't understand it. We just knew he was God, and there it was. But Peter, dude, this is not going to work for you. An 11-0 vote, you're going down. And sometimes when Jesus is calling us to stuff, sometimes when there is an exciting adventure ahead of us of trusting Christ, we turn around for a minute, we look at the people who are behind us, and we realize, man, if I follow Jesus, it means some of my friends are going to look down on me. If I follow Jesus, they're going to make fun of me. If I follow Jesus and then I fail, if I follow Jesus and I accidentally cuss, they're going to be like, oh, I thought you were a Jesus person. If I follow Jesus and end up messing up over here, and I begin to be driven by the fact that I know people are looking at me, and if they're watching me, I feel their beady little eyes at the back of my neck, and I don't know how to deal with that, that my life becomes consumed to that, and that becomes the loudest voice, not the voice of Jesus. And Peter had to overcome all these fears right there and listen to the voice of Jesus, said, come on. Second thing I want to tell you is that you are going to have to look at Jesus. You're going to have to look at Jesus. You're going to have to focus on him and get your eyes on him. This is the beauty of the story. The story is not about how Peter overcame the water. The story is about how Jesus overcame the water and Peter got to ride with him, right? I mean, that was the joy of it. But for a moment, Peter's focus was only on Jesus. He had lost sight of the things around him. And that is the call of trusting Christ. And that's a good thing because there's a lot of things about Jesus we need to realize. Sometimes seeing is believing, not believing is, or, I'm sorry, believing is seeing, not seeing is believing. Remember the Santa Claus heard a little elf girl said that? You know, Tim Allen is trying to remember or trying to believe everything he's seeing, and he just can't do it. And the cute little elf girl says, you know, sometimes believing is seeing, not seeing is believing. And the life of faith is a lot like that. Sometimes we will not see the work of God in our life until we reach out and join him, until we focus our eyes on him and obey him and trust him and take leaps of faith. And even in the midst of those, there's trials. And it is how God holds us and holds on to us in the middle of hard times that sometimes is the greatest victory. And you are going to have to look at Jesus. Peter looked at him and said, if it's you, If that's you, Jesus, I want to join you. I want to be out there with you. And that's a good thing. We can trust Jesus for a lot of reasons. Let me give you three real quick. First of all, where he came from. In the story, he came from being alone with God. He came from a time where he'd been teaching people, and he'd done some incredible miracles, including the feeding of 5,000 people that I've referenced a couple times. But on a larger level, we can trust Jesus because of where he came from, the fact that he was God. He is eternally God. He was with God from the beginning. John chapter 1, verse 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Verse 14 of John 1 says, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Jesus, from eternity past to eternity future, always has been, always will be God. And we can trust him because where he came from. He came walking across the water. He was the one who created the elements, and now he was demonstrating his power over the elements. And I want to tell you that there's not a situation that you and I have in life. There's not a wave. There's not a wind. There's not a struggle that catches him off guard. He's been through it. He knew it was coming. You and I can trust Jesus because of where he came from. But we can also trust Jesus, not only that, because of where he has been. Peter is talking to a guy. I mean, picture this. Wind, waves. They are fighting the wind and the waves. Their boat is going side to side. There's guys in the back who are green, who are seasick because they're not fishermen and they didn't sign up for this, but they had to get to the other side. It is a nasty middle of the night, stars in the sky situation. And all of a sudden, Peter is having a conversation with somebody who is standing in the middle of a lake outside the boat. He is not, you know, this is not some seminar where somebody stands on stage and says, hey, this morning I want to bring to you five principles for walking on water. This is not some guy who stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night, okay? This is a guy who is walking on water. That is the great story. The great story of the gospel is that it's not about a God who is out there somewhere distant, who has kind of separated himself from his creation, who kind of made us and said, all right, try to figure your lives out. I'll be back in a few years. The story of the gospel is the fact that God himself came to be with us, to interact with us, to live among us, to be part of our lives. And he lived on earth. He experienced everything this world had to offer. And he lived in the midst of it. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 12 says this. Verse 15 says, we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. The writer of Hebrews is saying, listen, when we go to Jesus, we're not dealing with somebody who doesn't get it. We're dealing with somebody who has experienced every struggle, every temptation, every challenge, every situation, but every time he went through it, he was victorious. He trusted God and obeyed him. And all we got to do is focus our eyes on him. We can trust him because of where he's been. The third thing, we can trust him because of where he's going. Jesus was headed to the other shore. With or without them, he was headed to the other shore. He was not bound by the wind. He was not bound by the waves. He was not bound by the struggle they were in. He was just going to walk to the other side. And listen, that is the story of Jesus as well. Jesus eventually would walk to the cross. He would pay the ultimate penalty for you and for me. He would die on the cross for your sin and for mine. But then he came back 3 days later. He blew the door off the grave. He's victorious over sin and hell and everything that we fear, everything that we struggle with, he was victorious over. And he went to his disciples and he said, listen, I'm going to leave you, but I'm coming back. When I come back, I'm going to take you and you're going to live in eternity with me. We can trust Jesus because of where he's going. But listen, the only way that happens is if we keep our eyes on Jesus. Peter got out of the boat, flipped his legs over the side, and focused on following Christ. And that's what the Christian life is. The Christian life is not a life of trying. It's a life of trusting. It's a life of doing things that on my own willpower and ability I can't do. But I place my life in his hands and I keep my eyes on him. And the third thing that we're going to have to do and that Peter had to do is we're going to have to leave the boat. There is a point in time where I can know all the right things. I can know what I'm being called to. I can know what the adventure holds for me. I can be on the edge with my skis looking down the mountain. But there are points in life where I got to flip over the edge and just see what happens and trust Jesus. I just tell you that for our family, doing Genesis was one of these points. We talked about the idea of a new church for several years, and all of a sudden we began to realize that God was calling us to do it. And man, I talked to a lot of people about the idea, and there were a lot of fears and a lot of struggles. But as I looked to Jesus, I knew it was something I was supposed to do, we were supposed to do. And there was a point in time, and we could sit down and tell you the story and tell you specifically where that was, where we had to flip our legs over the side of this boat and jump on the water. Some of you have been listening for a long time about Jesus and about God, and you're sitting on the edge of the boat holding on, and you got white knuckles because you just don't want to let go. And you know that Jesus is calling you to trust him, to give your life to him, and to trust him and him only, to kind of put away your old way of life and to repent and just to give your life to him. And you know what you should do, but you're holding on the edge of the boat. And the call to jump out and to follow Jesus, man, it's just, I just can't let go. And I'm sure there was a moment for Peter as he flipped his legs over to the edge and as he held on to the boat like this, where he had to say, I've got to let go and walk towards Jesus. And man, there's a lot of reasons that needs to happen. It's white knuckles time. But listen, here's the problem. Boat life, first of all, for Peter at that point in time was confining. You're trapped in the boat, and Peter was trapped in a situation where the wind and the waves dictated where he was supposed to go, and he couldn't do anything but go where it took him. In our lives, boat life is confining. I want to tell you that the life of serving and trusting Jesus is crazy, and it's hard, and it's filled with struggles, but it is an adventure where we can trust Jesus to get us outside of our own failures and struggles. Boat life is also controlling. I am totally at the mercy of the wind and the waves. I don't have any choice of where they take me. Boat life is also boring. Just sitting in the boat, rocking from side to side. And boat life is also guilt-ridden. Because let me be honest with you. We as people, we're not created to live in the boat of our own failures, of our own sin, of our own struggles, of our own desires, of our own wants. You were created for the adventure with God. Just like Adam and Eve were created in the garden to have a vibrant, all-out, unbelievable adventure with God, so are you. And when I stay in my own comfort zone, eventually I'm going to live in a lot of guilt because it's not where I'm supposed to be. But I want to tell you that it's freeing. There's failure. Listen, Peter took a few steps, and it doesn't really tell us how far he walked before he noticed the wind and the waves, and he sunk. And guess what? I'm going to too. I'm going to fail. The beauty is not that I have to hold myself up, because that's impossible. The beauty is that when I step out and I trust Jesus and I follow him and I give him my life and I follow him each day where he calls me to do things, and I follow him in the huge things where occasionally in life he calls me to do something that is just unbelievable at that moment. When I make the decision to get out of the boat and trust Christ and give my life to him, he even picks me up in the midst of my failure. And all of a sudden, it is about me looking back at my life, realizing that Jesus was the one who's controlling and taking care of things and making everything happen. It was just me keeping my eyes on him and following him. And that's what the gospel is. That's why I love this story. It's a story about a guy who had a moment where he had to make a decision. Will I trust the one voice who's telling me to come, or every other voice that's telling me to stay where it's safe? And he trusted the one voice. And now we look back on this story, and even though he failed, there is the truth that in the middle of a dark, windy night on a lake in the middle of nowhere, really, in a little redneck fishing boat with 11 guys, two guys did what nobody else has ever done, and they become an example for us to look to as I realize that it is all about Jesus, but he's calling me to come. He's calling me to get involved and to trust him. And on that day, like, you know, when I was skiing, there is a white knuckles time where I have to make a decision. And maybe you're dealing with something in your life. Maybe for you, you have been around church and you've even done all the church stuff, but it's always been safe and comfortable and never just a total abandonment of myself to the purpose of God. And you hear him calling you. And maybe some of you today, it's just a matter of trusting Jesus for the first time. Maybe there's some of you here today where it's really more of, I have Christ in my life, and there was a point in time where I literally did take a leap of faith, but I'm living in a very comfortable spot right now when I know that God is calling me to some other things. And maybe for you, the challenge is just to reconfirm some commitments and surrender and trust Jesus. There might be some of you who are here who are college age or you know younger, and you're thinking, man, what am I going to do with my life? And on the inside of your head, there's this sense of call to something that is so much bigger than a 9-to-5 job. Nothing wrong with that if you live as a missionary in a 9-to-5 job. But some of you feel the call of God to go overseas. Some of you feel the call of God to go serve in other just crazy ways. And you know if you went to your parents or if you went back to everybody else, they would say, man, what are you talking about? You're so talented. You have so many abilities. But you hear God telling, listen, I created you for myself. I want you to do something crazy for me. And you're holding on and you're holding back and you're not sure what to do with it. Maybe you just need to take some steps to say, listen, if that's what Jesus wants, wherever he is, that's where I want to be. But I just want to encourage you, wherever it is this morning, there's always a response, first of all, to trust Christ. To say, I will follow you, I will trust you, I will get beyond myself. I will realize that I can't do any of this, but you can in my life, I will trust you. There's also repentance of letting go of the boat and turning away from the things in my life that are, you know, about me and my failure and following Jesus. Wherever you're at this morning, I just want to tell you that's the proper response. I don't repent just when I get saved. I repent every day and trust Jesus every day. Some of you, it needs to start the first time. For some of you, you need to come back to the point where you get out of where you're comfortable and follow Christ wherever you are. I just want to encourage you, obey this morning. Have a time with God. Repent. Trust him. If you're here this morning and you're like, you know, I've never done this the first time. I've never trusted Jesus the first time. I want to tell you that I would love to talk to you about what that really means and how you walk through a prayer and a process that helps you experience Jesus. And I'll be hanging out at the information table after the service. And if you want to talk to that, I'd love to do that. As we repent and we trust Jesus and we give our lives to him, always the proper response is worship. The end of the story says this, and they worshiped him. 12 guys fell on their faces. The word from the original language says they fell on their faces before Jesus and they worshiped him. But here's the question I have for you. Of 12 guys, who do you think had the greatest worship? That is what life, we'll be in settings where we will worship, we'll sing, we'll celebrate, we'll look to Jesus. But it is those who are where Jesus is on a daily basis, living a life of faith, that will have the greatest worship. That's why when a band gets up or a group gets up and sings, you'll have some people who are just non-responsive to it while others just can't control themselves. Usually that's a sign that those people have been where Jesus was. And we're going to worship. And my hope is that maybe you're just quiet for a few minutes and you deal with God, but eventually you come to the point where you can celebrate and you can sing and you can say, Jesus, wherever it is, that's wherever you are, that's where I want to be. And I'm just willing to do that. And my singing in response to you is to say, this is my surrender to you and my commitment to be where you are and keep my eyes on you. But we're going to worship. We're going to have our offering. Our offering is a time where those of us who are part of Genesis give back to God because of all that he's done for us. If you're a guest, we don't expect you to give, don't want you to give. But it is an act of worship, an act of saying, God, you've done so much, and I trust you. We're going to sing. We're going to worship. We're going to celebrate. We're going to look to Jesus. I'm just going to invite you to deal with him however you want to. After I pray, I'm going to invite you to stand, but you may choose to stay seated, and we're going to sing and worship. Jesus, we love you. We praise you. I thank you for the story of Peter, and I thank you for the story of Jesus and the fact that you gave your son to come live on this earth and pay the ultimate price so that we could have an adventure. And Lord, if there's somebody here this morning who just needs to take a step of faith of trusting you, I just pray you open their heart and open their eyes to that. In your name I pray. Amen.